WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Maria Leaf. President Biden will speak at a memorial service later today for fallen law enforcement officers.
The 40th annual National Peace Officer Service is on the West Front of the U.S. Capitol today, a ceremony honoring the 491 law enforcement officers who died in the line of duty in 2019 and 2020. President Biden will deliver the keynote speech. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the memorial at the Capitol is particularly poignant after the January 6th breach and violent riot that injured responding police officers. The president is also expected to recognize the role law enforcement played on the front lines of the pandemic. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
In a few weeks, you'll have an opportunity at Arlington National Cemetery that hasn't come along in almost 100 years.
On November 9th and 10th, you'll be able to walk up to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington National Cemetery and lay a flower in front of it.
It's part of the centennial commemoration of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
The tomb is the gravesite for three unknown American service members. But Gerald Lowe with Arlington National Cemetery says it also
stands in for those families who have a loved one who's been lost in action and their remains were not recovered. So it's a place where those families and friends can come and mourn.
Register at Eventbrite.com. Heather Curtis on WMAL and WMAL.com.
Four people in the hospital this morning, one in critical condition after shots were fired during a high school football game in Mobile, Alabama last night. Chief Paul Prine is with the Mobile Police Department.
At least two of the perpetrators fled in a white sedan. What we do have is that there are possibly two black male subjects that were involved in the altercation, but we have not identified them at this time.
Witnesses say that gunfire caused chaos with spectators running in fear and players and cheerleaders told to stay on the ground for several minutes. The investigation continuing into the death of Gabby Petito.
A lot of developments in the Gabby Petito case this week, starting with the news that her cause of death was strangulation. Her parents also making the trip to Wyoming to meet with investigators and bring her remains home. Gabby Petito was discovered September 19th in the Bridger-Teton National Forest. Thursday, her parents hiked to the remote site where her body was found to see the location for themselves and to leave their own remembrances, including a bright yellow sunflower. Her father, Joe Petito, tweeting a photo of the Teton Mountain Range, saying, "I now know why you came here. Hashtag Gabby Petito has a beautiful view from now on. Love you and miss you."
Fox's Laura Engel. One local city in Maryland is helping you get rid of junk.
We offer bulk pickup at their house once every calendar year, and then we also allow residents to bring things to FreeCycle. We hold one in the fall and one in the spring.
The fall FreeCycle is today, but only for Frederick City residents.
We offer people the option to bring, you know, furniture, appliances, bicycles, mattresses, grills, you know, bulk flooring, like whatever they have.
Ashley Waters with the City of Frederick says local charities are also on hand to collect any items still usable. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic and weather. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia on 66, Fairfax County, it's jammed up on the eastbound side of 66 between 123 and the Beltway. No delays on the westbound side of 66 in Fairfax County. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, inner loop and outer loop, just checked out the traffic cameras. All lanes are clear and at speed. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not going to tap the brakes northbound or southbound. And in D.C., 295, 395, and 695, plus the tunnels and bridges, all lanes are clear of construction and crashes. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Temperatures in the mid-70s to low 80s. Partly cloudy tonight. Lows in the upper 40s to low 50s. It's 68 right now at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. It's Hour 2, and John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com, and he is back from Hungary. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick, and it's good to be back, but I thoroughly enjoyed Hungary.
Well, I want to ask you about that in a few minutes, because you had an interesting article about Hungary and the Taliban. But first off, I want to get started on some of the political events going on this week. And Texas politics has been front and center for a number of reasons. Obviously, the border, the vaccination mandates, the mask mandates, and the talk of a Hollywood actor running for governor. What is the latest from Texas, John?
Well, they're headed for a clash that Republicans in Texas privately call the gunfight at the OK Corral. This is Governor Greg Abbott, Republican, facing President Joe Biden, Democrat. Last week, Governor Abbott issued an executive order banning any entity in Texas from requiring vaccines for the COVID. And by entity, I mean government offices, schools, and private businesses. Now, this has set up the stage for a clash with Washington. The very same day, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki was asked about this because it flies in the face of the mandate that President Biden has put down for businesses and for government, that you've got to have the vaccine. And in the private sector, it's if the business has over 100 employees. She also added that Governor Abbott's decision was motivated by politics. And she said that in the end, federal law takes precedent over state law. This is going to lead to one of these clashes between state capital and U.S. capital, and we'll hear a lot about it as it surely works its way to the Supreme Court.
In terms of the Texas gubernatorial race, Greg Abbott could face a very interesting candidate.
The one Democrat, and again, Texas has no party registration, so we're not yet sure he's a Democrat. But assuming that he is a Democrat, Matthew McConaughey, the actor, Oscar winner, beats Governor Abbott head-to-head in virtually every poll. This is not true of the other Democrat mentioned for the governorship, former congressman and U.S. Senate nominee Beto O'Rourke. He loses to Abbott, but Matthew McConaughey, who has not even stated what party he has allegiance to, wins. Now, it would just seem logical that someone who is as hard-driving a campaigner and party leader as Joe Biden would know about this and ask Matthew McConaughey to run. I posed this question to Jen Psaki at the briefing on Thursday, and she said no call has been made from this office. On the other hand, she said the president is a very good retail politician, and he's monitoring the Texas situation closely. This just in, Matthew McConaughey is reported to be making calls, sounding out potential supporters on a race for the governorship next year.
Is there any talk that McConaughey would run independent and potentially run against Abbott and O'Rourke, or would he ultimately just try and get that Democratic nod, or is it just too early to tell?
It's too early to tell, but most Texans that I've talked to believe he will end up as a Democrat simply because independent candidacies in the past have sunk some very promising Democrats from winning the governorship. And Rick Perry won his final term in Austin in a very crowded race with people running as independents. Matt McConaughey is smart enough to know this, and this reporter's guess is that if he makes the plunge, it will be in the Democratic side of the swimming pool.
You know, it's funny, some of the people in the administration have been sort of low profile. We don't see too much of Kamala Harris unless it's in a very staged situation. Mayor Pete's been kind of quiet, and Mayor Pete's going to be even more quiet, I understand.
Mayor Pete just became a parent for the first time, and like a lot of other parents throughout America, he took advantage of the parental leave law. He's been on parental leave with his newborn, and thus he's barely been above the screen. Just last week, he appeared on social media, and he began tweeting instructions to his office through the Internet. Swell. But why this is controversial and is raising a few eyebrows here is because of the problem we have with supply chains. On Wednesday and Thursday, most of the questions at the White House briefings were about supply chains and how necessities were just not making it to the desired place of destination. This should be the purview of the Department of Transportation. But as people are starting to say about him here in Washington, Secretary Pete is absent with leave.
So your birthday was this week, and Jen Psaki gave you, what, two presents on your birthday?
Yes, she did. Two questions. One was about Matthew McConaughey, and the other was about Taiwan. I've heard so much about the administration being committed to our friend, the Republic of China, on Taiwan, and I wanted it on the record. Would we go to war if China launched an attack on the island nation 90 miles off its coast? Now, it should be pointed out, this question packs more of a punch these days. More than 100 flights by Chinese fighter jets were recorded over Taiwan, and just last week, President Xi reiterated the same vow that has been uttered by his predecessors going back to the murderous Mandarin Mao Zedong, that Taiwan will be part of the motherland. Now, strong medicine, all right. Jen Psaki said the U.S. is committed as an ally to Taiwan under the 1978 Taiwan Relations Act. However, when it came to actually saying whether the U.S. would go to war with China over Taiwan and U.S. troops would fight side by side with the Taiwanese, well, she just said she was not going to give any strategic answers at this point. So in other words, nothing new on that front, as China ominously looks at its small neighbor to the south.
Well, you were on the border this week, but not the southern border, the Hungarian border, and you have a story from there which I think is very interesting.
I spoke to the National Security Advisor to Prime Minister Viktor Orban, essentially the Hungarian Jake Sullivan, and one of the things he told me was that Hungary has strict border policies, a fence, barbed wire at the top, mounted police, and Doberman Pinschers, Rottweilers, and German Shepherds patrolling. If one tries to come over or cross in or cut the wire, camera turns on it, and you hear you're in violation of the law in seven languages. Why all this effort on the border? Well, he told me, it all goes back to 2015 and someone named George Soros. The Hungarian-born billionaire and the various non-governmental organizations he funds were urging migration into different countries in Europe, among them Hungary. More than 400,000 people illegally came into Hungary. Most were not young families with children, but young men standing side by side saying almost in unison, "I'm a political prisoner, and I'm seeking asylum." Well, then they said they were from Syria, but they didn't speak Arabic. You know the rest of the story. Hungary adopted the strong border security measures, and the number of people trying to get into the country has diminished right up to the point that less than 4,000 attempted it this year. So, where did this all start, and why is there a need for this border security that so upsets the European Union and the United States? Well, it goes back to one person with a vision of a United States of Europe, George Soros.
Mm. John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. You can follow his travels on Twitter at John Gizzi. John, thank you very, very much.
Oh, always a pleasure, Rick. As I said, we're sure to have more fireworks next week. I don't anticipate any belated birthday presents.
Cheryl Atkinson coming up next, but right now we're going to head to the WMAL Traffic Center, and Al BD is there this morning.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway, there is an accident. Right shoulder is blocked in Cabin John, right at the Cabin John Parkway, exit 40. on 66 eastbound in Fairfax. That's jammed up between 123 and the Beltway. On the westbound side of 66 in Centerville, you're going to find traffic slow between the Fairfax County Parkway and Route 28. And right now, there are no delays on 95 between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Today, chance for some gusty showers and storms. Think of the timing will be midday and into the early afternoon and around the D.C. metro. Wind gust upwards of 40 miles per hour or higher pretty quickly along the front as it moves in. So be prepared for that. Highs near 80 degrees later on tonight. We'll dip back in the 40s in the suburbs, 50s around town for your Sunday. High temperatures only in the mid-60s under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the StormWatch 7 Weather Center.
65 degrees in the nation's capital, 719, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Monday, we'll start the final countdown for the Virginia governor's race, plus politically incorrect Halloween costumes. O'Connor and Company, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL, and we're glad that you have joined us this weekend. And each week, it is great to be joined by Cheryl Atkison. She, of course, is the host of Full Measure. That's every Sunday morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. She's authored Slanted, The Smear, and Stonewalled. And Cheryl, it's always good to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Now, we see the record numbers of illegal immigrants streaming across the border, and we see the images across television, but we don't see much attention paid to the impact on legal travelers and the impact in general on commerce in the Southwest.
Well, I think people had no idea this was going on, but even while tourists could fly into this country from Canada and Mexico, or these illegal border crossers have been welcomed in by the hundreds of thousands, legal travelers, tourists basically, non-essential travelers, that want to come across the border by foot or by car, as hundreds of thousands of them do, they've been banned for over 18 months. And these are the people that some of them come in every day or every week into the U.S. They do their shopping there. And the result has been thousands of businesses along the border on the American side have closed down permanently, and we've lost $19 billion a year. I mean, it's really a stunning figure. Well, this week, the Biden administration announced, after lots of pressure from people like Democrat Henry Cuellar, who's from a border town congressman, who said this policy never made any logical sense. Well, finally, the Biden administration's turning it around in November. These tourists will be allowed for the first time since COVID to come back across, but it's too late for some people. A lot of these businesses are shut permanently. There are a few, you'll hear from them on Sunday, that are hoping this change coming before the holidays, which is a busy season for them, maybe it will save a few of the businesses that have been able to stay open.
The Biden administration, they have to see these poll numbers, and they see 2022 lurking in the distance here. It'll be interesting to see if they can turn these things around.
It will. I mean, I'm no political expert, but it just seems like so much of the steps they're taking are leading to chain reactions of other things that not only are not positively impacting citizens of the country, but would seem to be negatively impacting them politically. So it's hard to figure out where things are going.
The Supreme Court has gotten into college sports. It is a sea change and a profitable change for athletes. Tell us about this. I think this is fascinating.
Well, I learned that the Supreme Court, maybe some of the people listening already knew this, but they came out with a decision in recent months that said college athletes, for the first time, can be compensated for their likeness, something that's always been prohibited. So Lisa Fletcher looked into this for us, and she said, this decision's creating all kinds of chaos as everybody tries to figure out what it means. There are some people saying, well, we need a national standard. We can't have every state and every college coming up with different compensation. And some are saying Congress needs to pass a law. So we'll hear from both sides as they talk about how they think this is really forever changing college sports as we knew it, for better or for worse.
There were many protest songs during the Vietnam War era, but there is a new protest song about military action in Afghanistan?
Well, yes, maybe some people have started to hear it. I think I first had Five for Fighting. He's actually known in real life as John Ondrasik. He's a singer-songwriter. He wrote this really heartfelt song about the Afghanistan, the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. He's really moved by it. He's the guy, people may know his song Superman or 100 Years or The Riddle. The Superman song got played a lot after 9/11, sort of a tribute to 9/11 heroes. But you'll know him if you hear his songs. Well, he just said he's not a political activist, and he, I think, has kept quiet about his politics all these years, but he said this isn't a political song. It's sort of like in the tradition of these anti-war songs, that he's surprised more artists haven't spoken out about the people that were killed as we tried to get out of Afghanistan, the Afghans, the innocent civilians that were killed, the people that fell off that airplane as the U.S. plane was pulling out of the Kabul airport. So I speak with him, and we'll hear his song and see what you think about it. But I think it's really, again, heartfelt and fascinating. It's sort of a current event commentary done by a really inspiring and famous artist.
I know last week you did a story about the vaccine mandates, and we're seeing more and more. I mean, the chaos in Chicago between the mayor and the police union. And you've got ongoing updates at CherylAtkison.com on the variety of different angles on COVID-19, and especially on the vaccine and the mask mandates.
Well, I think what's been helpful to some people, this is the most popular topic in all the years I've had this website, this topic about natural immunity and COVID-19 vaccines and so on. And none of it is anti-vaccine. It's not pro-vaccine. It's fact-based, where there are lists of studies so people can just decide for themselves. You don't have to believe what someone else is trying to tell you. You can look at the studies and make up your own mind. But the chaos over these vaccine mandates, the local ones, the corporate ones, the national one, which is coming into play soon, I don't know where this goes. But there are court challenges. There's resistance, as you mentioned, in Chicago, a suggestion that half of the police force could be out because of this, that they're not going to comply. There are hundreds of Boeing workers. There are teachers and healthcare workers. And even if this is not, I would say, you know, 50% of the workforce isn't going to object. They're going to need to keep their jobs even if they don't really want to get vaccinated. Most of them probably will. But even if it's, you know, 25%, 12.5% that raises their hand and says no, this is really going to create a problem, I think, in this work environment. I'm hearing just in my life people contacting me from all over the country, teachers, federal workers, ATF workers, border workers, police, saying, I'm just not going to do it. And they don't really know where it's headed. I'm curious, too, to see where this goes and where these court challenges go.
And again, at CherylAtkison.com, a number of updates, and they're ongoing on COVID-19 and the vaccine and mask situation in general. Cheryl, as always, thank you very much. We'll be looking for you tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock.
All right. Thank you.
It is 7:26 Saturday morning update. Tony Schaefer coming up right after the 7:30 news. He was at the Stu Scheller trial this week. We'll get the very latest. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus Media station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Maria Leaf. The Defense Department says it's committed to offering condolence payments to the relatives of the 10 people who were killed in an errant U.S. drone strike in Kabul back in August. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby saying the Defense Department's also working with the State Department to help surviving family members relocate to the U.S. Kirby did not say how much money would be offered. Former President Bill Clinton remains in the hospital battling an infection.
A spokesman says the 42nd president is at University of California Irvine Medical Center, where he is getting intravenous antibiotics as he tries to recover from a urological infection. The spokesperson says the 75-year-old is in excellent spirits. An aide to the former president says the infection spread to his bloodstream, but he never went into septic shock. President Biden told reporters he spoke to Clinton, saying he's not in any serious condition and he'll be out of the hospital shortly. The current president called his predecessor the comeback kid. Sean Lanchel, Fox News.
WML Sports, the American League playoffs. The Astros last night beating the Red Sox 5-4. NHL, the Caps host the Lightning tonight at 7. WML traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic and weather. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia on 395 northbound in Arlington. Heads up, disabled vehicles got the right lane blocked right near Boundary Channel Drive exit 10. On 66 eastbound in Fairfax, that's jammed up between 123 and the Beltway. And on the westbound side of 66 in Centerville, you'll find traffic slow between the Fairfax County Parkway and Route 28 exit 53. And finally, on 95 in Virginia, all lanes are clear, northbound and southbound between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. From GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Highs today 75 to 80, but those temperatures will be falling. Partly cloudy tonight. Lows in the upper 40s to low 50s. It's 68 right now at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on Washington's Mall, WMAL.
7:37 Saturday morning update, WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart, and he is also the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Well, Thursday, Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller faced a special court-martial hearing, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. You were there. Take us through the day.
So in the morning, it had already been decided by Stu Schiller's lawyers. And by the way, Tim Parlatore, big shout out to him. He's there in D.C. right now. He was the lead attorney. Tim had worked essentially a deal, I guess is the best way of putting it, for Stu to stand up, for Colonel Schiller to stand up and take responsibility. Imagine that, saying the right thing to actually lay out how, he did it. He did the things he was accused of doing. The whole day after the morning session where they laid out, accepting the responsibility was then spent from about noon on with mitigation. Basically, why did Colonel Schiller say what he did and was he justified? So the bulk of the day was witnesses showing up, to include myself, going through and essentially laying out why the case is that that Schiller doing the right thing is extraordinary by the fact that he's the only person out of the Afghan debacle who's actually taken responsibility for anything. The hearing at noon on was basically a number of members of Congress. My friend Louis Gohmert, Representative Gohmert, was there in person. Marjorie Taylor Greene, a handful of one other congressman out of Texas, and then people who actually knew Stu, one combat veteran who had lost his leg. Stu had helped save his life. And then I was there to essentially create some level of foundational groundwork to justify and validate what he'd said as an Afghanistan expert, a whistleblower, and someone who's stood up a few times in front of folks and been a bit direct in my criticism. And so that's what happened in the afternoon. The goal was to greatly reduce, if not remove, any of the adverse actions proposed by the judge. The prosecution, if you can imagine, Rick, wanted to really go through some severe stuff. And instead of anything severe, he ended up with a DOD letter of reprimand and a penalty of about $5,000 regarding loss of pay. And it looks like he'll be able to get the honorable discharge, which he seeks. He will not retire, unfortunately. He'll be getting out of, I think, 17 years. But the entire Thursday session was simply organized around his taking responsibility, people showing up to tell why it's important for him to have taken responsibility, and pointing out, Rick, that no one else, the SecDef, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the commander of Central Command, most importantly the president, no one has taken one lick of responsibility for what they did and their material failures in the Afghan debacle.
For somebody that hasn't followed this closely, tell us what the charges were. I mean, it all revolved around social media posts, right?
There were six charges. I don't remember off the top of my head, but they had to relate with the conduct unbecoming a gentleman, which they always get you on if they want to get you on something, criticizing a superior officer, a commissioned officer, breaking a direct order, which he did at one point regarding going on social media after he was told not to. And those were all the type of charges he was given. And what is notable, and I was asked this question on the stand, about what I thought about these social media posts and, did I think it was appropriate? And I said, no, well, I don't think it was appropriate to have taken that course as a method of expressing his legitimate concerns. But I said, what he said on social media is no worse fundamentally as a uniformed officer than what General Milley did as a uniformed officer going behind his boss's back, President Trump, and going to the media. And it's true. I got an objection from the prosecutors on that because I didn't like it, but it's true. And, you know, you can't unring that bell. I mean, they, you know, the judge did sustain their objection. I don't know why, because it's true. But that's the fundamental fact, is that Milley did the same thing in a far more egregious manner, but he just didn't get held accountable, which goes back to the theme of why this was important for Colonel Schiller to stand up and take accountability for his own actions.
I believe you get a military pension after 20 years. Is it what happens with him only being in 17?
You know, the new system allows you to get some level of money out of the system. If he was participating in a sort of savings program, he'll get something out of that. It's different than from when I retired. And the other thing, he has been able to acquire via some funds. I think his family's going to be taken care of. You know, I've been told, I haven't verified this, he's got about $2 million waiting for him to make the transition. So he's not going to be left swinging. With that said, I think he was able to make his point. I don't think he's going, you know, he'll serve no more jail time. There'll be no more severe punishment. But it's very clear, Rick, that everything he did was what a stand-up, honorable officer would do faced with allegations of inappropriate behavior. We have yet to see anyone else after the death of 12 Marines, one sailor, and the loss of all the civilians in Afghanistan and the complete loss of confidence globally in our military, no one has yet to take any responsibility.
An interesting note, not related to Stu Schiller, but is related to social media posts. Article at RT.com, which I believe is a Russian publication.
That is Russia, yes.
It has a social media post from Major General Joe Clyburn, and she's posting, quote, why the Army thinks a French manicure is an obnoxious color compared to the civilian world, which views it as an understated yet professional look, is beyond me. But I have to be in uniform tomorrow, so here we are. It looked nice while it lasted, and she's got a nice shot of her hand. I guess the nails are still being done there, and a nice shot of her red toenails. There's an interesting social media post
on
from
her desk. Yes.
Major General Clyburn. Yeah, feet on the desk. Ugh.
So this is, again, symbolic of the woke military, and the Russians are making fun of us. Now, can you imagine, Rick, a general, this general is now going to be forever known for her battle against French manicure policy. That's quite the battle to take on. And no, I mean, this is people, these moron generals are that tone deaf. We have record suicides. We have record levels of incompetence. And yet all they're worried about is wokeism. There's another article out today. I hadn't had time to talk to you about it earlier. The Navy SEALs are getting their folks kicked out. These guys are on the front edge of protecting America. They're being all forced out under the COVID vaccine requirement, which essentially has no real science behind it. It's across the board, Rick. And Schiller, this wacky general who is fighting the French manicure policy, it's all rot at the heart of our military.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, check out his Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much, and thank you for being down there and giving us the full story.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You betcha. 7:46, Saturday morning update. We'll talk to KT McFarland next. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
And Virginia on 66 eastbound. It's jammed up in Fairfax between 123 and the Beltway. No delays on the westbound side of 66 in Fairfax County. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, it's good on the inner loop and on the outer loop. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, you're not going to tap the brakes in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, inner loop or outer loop. On 270 in Montgomery County, no delays between the Beltway and Frederick, northbound and southbound. And on Route 50 in Prince George's County, you're going to find it clear between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, chance for some gusty showers and storms. Think of the timing would be midday and into the early afternoon and around the D.C. metro. Wind gust upwards of 40 miles per hour or higher pretty quickly along the front as it moves in. So be prepared for that. Highs near 80 degrees later on tonight. We'll dip back in the 40s in the suburbs, 50s around town for your Sunday. High temperatures only in the mid-60s under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
66 degrees in the nation's capital, 747 on the Saturday morning update. It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We're at 749. We are joined by KT McFarland, President Trump's first deputy national security advisor, and she is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, we are always honored to have you join us.
Well, I'm honored to be with you.
Well, thank you. President Biden's really having a rough go of it. I mean, even CNN headlines are questioning his ability to deliver on the agenda. There's a lot of questions about the efficiency of so many areas in the administration. How would you kind of sum up where the president is right now?
Lame duck. And here's why. American politics are always like a pendulum. Things go so far in one direction, and then they suddenly reverse. In addition to that, ideologues, revolutionary ideologue zealots, they always push too far. French Revolution, Chinese Culture Revolution, American Woke Revolution. They keep going and going and going because nothing is ever good and is never far enough. They need constantly to replenish their oxygen by going after more and more people. They never know when to stop. And so those two things combined, there's a certain point at which the American people say, hey, wait a minute, this is all nuts. And then the pendulum swings in the other direction. We're almost there. We're not quite there yet, but we're almost there. And here's what I think happens going forward. If Biden fails to get his spending package passed, and I think that's likely to happen, if he fails to get it passed by Thanksgiving, then all the House Democrats and Senate Democrats, they're going to go home and they're going to hear just an earful. And they will have no political cover for voting, continuing to vote with the progressives or with, I call them, the loony left. And so then you're going to start seeing a real defection in some of the moderate Democrats in the middle. Remember, the majority in the House is only three votes. A couple of people get a head cold, and Biden can't get his agenda passed. And in the Senate, it's 50-50. You don't need much of a switch to change things around. And the Democrats, the Washington swamp is sort of so in love with itself that they're even saying, Congressman Kristen Sinema of Arizona, well, maybe she ought to just become a Republican then if she doesn't go along with our agenda. Have you guys done the math? If she becomes a Republican, you lose control of the Senate, and there goes your subpoena power, and there comes their subpoena power. Anyway, I've been predicting for a long time, I mean, like for a year or 9 months anyway, that the Democrats would push it too far. And in 2022, here's what you would see. It would be just like I saw when I came back from Oxford University in 1979, and the country was just in there were supply chain crises, high inflation, high gas prices, stagnant economy, high unemployment, really high interest payments, new taxes on the middle class, and the country just tossed Jimmy Carter out on a dime. And you have to remember, I mean, people don't, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And when Jimmy Carter was elected, in 1976, he was elected as the savior of American politics. He was going to be the unifier. He was a good guy, honorable man, who was going to bring us together after the horrors and division of Vietnam and Watergate. But 2 years into his presidency, it was a fiasco, particularly economically. We had hostages in Iran by the third year. There were gas shortages, long lines at the gas station pumps. Inflation was really high. And interest rates were so high that if you wanted to get a mortgage and buy an apartment or a house, you couldn't do it. The interest rates were, in some states, 20%. I mean, that's against the usury laws in some parts of the country. And so what happened was that the country just said, hey, this is enough of this. This great unifier, that was long
in the rearview mirror, and they tossed him out and voted for Reagan, who had a complete reversal of economic policy and foreign policy, and ultimately ended up marginalizing the Democrats and the left for a generation and introducing a generation of peace and prosperity to the United States.
Well, that's the domestic front. What do you see on the foreign policy side of things?
I see a repeat, but in some ways much more serious and much worse. I think what happens is that China has gotten the measure of Joe Biden, whether there's a corruption element to it or whether they've just looked at him and said, well, these guys are just wimps. We're going to be able to walk all over them. And they've decided, and their rhetoric shows this, as well as their military exercises, they're going to make a move on Taiwan, I predict, right after the Beijing Olympics, the same way that Putin made a move on Ukraine and Georgia, rather, after the Olympics, the Russian Olympics. You know, the Chinese have been waiting for these Olympics as the sort of crowning glory. And the Olympics that they're going to have in February, because of COVID, they're not letting foreigners in. It's only going to be the Olympics. The only people who are coming besides the athletes are Chinese. So this is going to be a crowning achievement for them. They don't want to do anything to ruin it or to jeopardize it. So I don't think they make a move until after the Olympics. But then they will make their move on Taiwan because they don't want to wait around. They're not dumb. They look at the American political drifts and winds, and they understand that Joe Biden will probably lose control of the House and the Senate in November of 22. So by March of 22, they'll start making their move. Now, I don't think they invade Taiwan. I don't think they have to. They could have a naval blockade of Taiwan. They could do tariff wars with Taiwan. They could do trade wars with Taiwan. There's a lot they could do. And the assumption is by many and most, even in Taiwan, that Joe Biden is going to be missing in action, that they may, you know, issue some strong statements, but that there's going to be very little they will do to back up Taiwan. And it could all happen so quickly that Taiwan makes its own independent peace with Beijing on Beijing's terms. I mean, that's certainly what the Chinese are telling Taiwan. Don't expect. Look at Afghanistan. Look at the shambolic Biden administration's dysfunction in Washington. Don't expect them to come to your aid. You might as well cut a deal with us while you can. And as much as the other countries in Asia, Japan, Korea, Philippines, others, may want a different outcome, it's very hard to see how they can do much of anything to help Taiwan without the United States leading the way.
Got about 2 minutes left. What do you make of the tone deafness of the White House, the chief of staff, Ron Klain, saying this week that the inflation was a high-class problem? What do you make of that?
They're so out of touch. I mean, do these people not go to grocery stores? Do they not go get gas? I mean, I guess maybe their staff gets it for them. But everybody else in the country, rich or poor, and particularly at the lower end, are horrified by what they're seeing. I mean, the price of milk, the price of beef is up. I mean, everything has gone up to the point where even rich people understand it, but poor people and the working class and the middle class, they really understand it. You know, think about Joe Biden. I mean, he campaigns as, I'm working class Joe. I'm really with you. And the backbone of his political support throughout his political career has been working class Democrats. Well, working class Democrats are not going to be with him in the 2022 election, especially if you have the White House chief of staff saying, oh, well, it's only rich people who care about, you know, this is not a big problem for the working class. But their taxes are going to go up. Inflation is eating into whatever economic goodies they're getting thrown by the Washington swamp. And they're in much worse shape now than they were. And you know, so you can see politically, the Democrats aren't dumb. I mean, they're just talk about Donald Trump. Donald Trump's so terrible. He's so awful, and they're still really riveted by Donald Trump and the mean tweets. But the rest of the country, those mean tweets, those are way in the background. And all they can remember is, hey, wait, when Trump was president, you know, we had high employment. We had economic good times. We had energy independence. I could afford my gasoline. Inflation wasn't there. My kids were happy. And now, what do they see? Well, complete dysfunction across the board, whether it's the woke culture wars, whether it's inflation, whether it's interest rates, whether it's high unemployment or a stagnant economy. And who are the Biden folks hurting the most? small business and working class and to the lower middle class. That's supposed to be their voters, and those voters are not going to be with them, and rightfully so.
KT, I've got CNN on in the background, and across the screen, across the lower third, big bold letters, gas prices skyrocket across the U.S., pain at the pump. Gas prices nearly doubled since April of 2020. So we'll leave it there. KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's 7:59. That's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL, a Cumulus Media station.